Okay, hello everyone and welcome to today's call called Breaking Addictions with Hypnosis. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure having you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Georgia Foster, but before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Georgia a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through our site by you, our listeners. Now, I was very excited about exploring addictions on the People You Should Meet program, because I know it's an area that does provide a lot of challenge for many people. Whether they're experiencing addictions themselves personally or whether they're close to a friend, a family member, a loved one who is actually dealing with and trying to overcome addiction. Now, Georgia Foster is an expert in the whole realm of addictions. She's an author, a speaker and a therapist who actually specialises in helping people with overeating, overdrinking and self-esteem issues. Now, another exciting thing is that we don't often get a chance to interview Australians on the program. So Georgia is actually originally from Australia, and she's also from my hometown of Melbourne, which is another exciting, I think maybe a first for the program, to Melburnians. So that's very exciting.
Right.
It's without further ado, I welcome Georgia to the call. Welcome, Georgia.
Thank you very much, Sammy. Welcome to everybody.
Great. So, Georgia, I actually just thought we'd begin at the very top, and I know that your work actually is a blending of hypnotherapy and also voice dialogue, and I was just wondering for people if you could just, first of all, just discuss what those two modalities are all about and also how they specifically relate to addictions.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, before I became a hypnotherapist, many years ago in my 20s, I discovered this particular psychology technique, which is a very well-known Jungian psychology, and the founders are Hal and Sidra Stone. And what they discovered was that we are all made up of many parts or sub-personalities, and there are many parts that support and there are some parts that don't. And what I discovered, my history, just a brief explanation of how where I've come from, is having suffered from massive food and alcohol issues. I don't say I was an alcoholic per se, but I was emotionally addicted to alcohol and definitely addicted to food. When I discovered this particular psychology theory, I actually realized there was a way out of my own issues. And so I went to California and I studied with Hal and Sidra Stone, the founders. I became a qualified voice dialogue therapist. I always felt, actually, to be honest, that voice dialogue wasn't really, for me, it didn't really explain the therapy per se, because a lot of people thought I was a voice trainer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But voice dialogue is really the theory that we are all made up of many parts, and the sub-personalities that cause havoc, as I said, are the ones that hold us back, actually can cause the addictions in the first place. And so I went to California and studied there, and then I came to London, and my boyfriend at the time, one of his friend's wives was studying hypnotherapy. I was thinking, oh, that sounds interesting. And so I went to study with the London College of Clinical Hypnosis. And then I did very well in the college and I went on to teach for a couple of years. And what I noticed was that voice dialogue, albeit an amazing, amazing tool, is that when I worked hypnotically with this particular technique, I was getting incredible results.
Mm.
And it's really the factor of that I believe that everybody has the right to make changes, but often they don't understand that it's the unconscious mind where the habits are stored.
Mm.
And in regards to any addiction to anything, whether it's smoking, whether it's exercising, whatever the subject is, how the unconscious mind works is that one of its main purposes is for us to avoid any sense of vulnerability. And vulnerabilities are stress, anxiety, loneliness, abandonment, fear, and all of those, you could call them negative emotions. What your unconscious mind does very cleverly it will say to you, this, we're not feeling safe, we're not feeling in this environment where you're able to cope. So it will find resources to calm you down, to take you into a space where you feel more comfortable. And how the mind works, the unconscious mind versus the conscious mind, is that when you're feeling any sense of fear, in a nanosecond, a millisecond of time, it will scan your mind for any evidence in your history of how you resolved these feelings before. And if you don't have the answers, it will look for them. What did your mother do? What did your father do? Or whatever. And often those resources are absolutely immediate. A cigarette. It could be alcohol and it could be food. And so what I discovered is that through hypnotherapy is that if your unconscious mind, that it's one of its purposes is to protect you, is that what I've noticed with the clients is that even though consciously they didn't really understand what was going on, they wanted to get over these addictions, but what they didn't understand was that the unconscious mind, where all of the emotional habits are stored, actually had created a pattern of thought, a pattern of behavior to resolve those vulnerabilities. And then, you know, it's no surprise when consciously somebody will say to me, a client or somebody, you know, wherever they are in the world will say to me, I don't understand why I keep repeating this same behavior over and over again. And I'm saying, look, there's no secret to hypnosis, absolutely nothing at all. It's no secret. What really is going on is your mind actually, ironically, is being very clever. It assumes that these substances or the habits that you may see as negative actually are protecting you. They're supporting you. And so even though I'm trained in voice dialogue, I find that if you want to go to the source where these habits are stored, is you need to go to that hypnotic state, which I can talk about as well. But more importantly is that what I love about the work that I do is it makes people realize that they're not bad, that they're not out of control. It's just a learnt behavior. And that the hypnosis is the most powerful, most effective way to break those anxiety states. So that instead of you using the resources from your past, which may be, oh my God, my boyfriend's just dumped me. Oh my God, my boss just got angry at me today. And you feel this massive stress driving the system and saying, I cannot wait to get home and have that piece of cake, or I cannot wait to have my coffee break and go and have a croissant, is that your mind then realizes that those responses are now not the responses that you need nor want. And we hypnosis through my programs, whether it's the weightless mind or the drinkless mind or the self-esteem program, Believing in You, it is about saying, you know what, your mind was clever, but now we're going to show that it has much better resources to work with.
Wow, that's amazing, George. I was just going to say, like, you shared so many incredible insights in that little piece, but the one thing I wanted to pick up on and explore further is the whole notion of the sub-personalities. Now, I think many people will certainly relate to this other kind of character or person taking hold of their of their person or their body or their actions and wreaking havoc for moments in time. And I was just wondering if, like, you mentioned also getting to the source of these personalities or the source within the unconscious mind. And I was just wondering for people who are sitting there that are conscious or aware that there are probably different layers of their personality, how they can safely get in touch with that part of them.
Well, that's exactly it. No, correct. It's the voice dialogue, where it comes in with the hypnosis, is that the psychology is that we're all made up of many parts, and voice dialogue, I've never, ever, by the way, been proven wrong with this theory in my personal life nor my professional life. And this is what I love about it. It's because there is one particular part that I spend a lot of time with in my client work and my workshops, is the part that I call the inner critic voice. It's that judgmental, negative voice. And the inner critic, we believe, was first and foremost created to protect us. If you could imagine, the inner critic is one of the parts, and I will cover other parts as well in this call, but the inner critic is a way to protect you. It will pretend to be your own personal psychic, your own crystal ball experience, and what it will say to you, and it's a real life conversation going on in your head. The inner critic will say something like, oh, you better not go for that job because you're not going to get it. Or you better not go on that diet because you've never lost weight before successfully. Oh, my God, you're so hopeless. You're useless. Oh, my God, you promised you were going to drink less tonight and you're not going to. You know, oh, my God, you know, you were really terrible in that meeting today. Everybody thinks you're a barking mad idiot. You know, all of these things may sound very, very negative and very offensive by nature, but this is actually how a lot of people speak to themselves on a regular basis. Mm. Now, voice dialogue, they believe, as I do, is that this, once again, because it is a protective mechanism, it thinks like a good girl guide, a Boy Scout, is planning your future so that you are prepared. Mm. If you don't know the tricks of what the inner critic does, you will believe it to be true and you will assume that its suggestions is the evidence it's not going to work. Mm. And so what happens is people procrastinate. People start to create anxiety conditions. And what we do know is the inner critic is the part that causes depression and anxiety. Mm. If you have had bouts of depression, it will be because your inner critic has become your strongest voice and has become the part that you actually believe to be true rather than the other positive voices that I'll talk about. Mm. And what I loved about this whole voice dialogue theory was that I had realized that my food issues, my weight issues, my anxiety and my social shyness was simply because my inner critic thought I was just, it just kept saying to me, you're fat, you're ugly, you're unsuccessful, what's the point? And I really believed this was true. I didn't realize before I learned this theory that I thought all of me was a terrible person. And then I realized that actually it was only a part of me that thought this and that there were other parts that could come and save the day. Mm. I call the inner critic part the radio crazy syndrome, this absolute ballistic conversation that goes on in people's heads. And when I started to specialize in particular alcohol addiction, is what we don't know why, but when you listen to this radio crazy, this inner critic voice, the most effective way to shut it off is to drink alcohol or take drugs. Mm. We don't know why it goes away, but that naturally confident, maybe, you know, maybe promiscuous or often funny or witty person comes out when you drink alcohol. And then people get addicted to that personality they think that they can get when they drink. And this is why the vicious cycle of addiction comes in, because the inner critic actually, when you drink, it goes away. But the problem is when you wake in the morning, with a bit of hangover or not feeling that great, it will come back and say, what did you say last night? Oh, my God, you don't remember. Everybody thinks you're an idiot. What is your problem? And my argument is, you know, people say on these websites, oh, you know, if you think about drinking alcohol before 12 o'clock in the day, you're an alcoholic. No, I don't believe you're an alcoholic. I believe you've got an inner critic issue. Mm. Because the inner critic will stir, because its negativity is so powerful and often quite violent, it will make you feel so scared about your day, facing your day, that you may want to drink at 9 o'clock. It doesn't mean you will, but you will have that stirring. And so the vicious cycle is through the day, oh, my God, you know, I promised I wouldn't drink today and everything, and now I feel like I'm not coping. And this is what I work with, is I believe that underpinning all anxieties and all addictions is a strong inner critic relationship that consciously is actually very difficult to break. Mm. And that's what I work with. I work with that radio crazy so that people can tune into what I call classic FM instead.
Mm. That's nice.
The inner critic is a learned behavior. It's purely a habit. And with the actual hypnosis, we can work with the voice dialogue on a much, much deeper level.
Mm, awesome. Now for someone who is very mindful of their inner critic and they can recognize that voice, how would they start to turn down the volume on the inner critic and maybe amplify some of the more supportive parts?
Mm. Well, the part that decided to make the call today is the part that I call that intuitive, healthy, confident part.
Mm.
Now, we know it's there because you've made the call today. Mm. We know it. That's the fact. The inner critic cannot deny that information.
Mm.
And that is what's fantastic about this work, is because if you didn't have this part, you just wouldn't bother.
Mm.
And this part is there, and it can be exercised more. And, you know, a couple of really good, effective tools is to, in the morning when you wake, before you get out of bed, if you can, 5 minutes, or when you go to bed at night, or somewhere in your day, just for 5 minutes, is to start to breathe in what this part feels like to you.
Mm.
Now, I'm sure many people will have had, obviously, challenging times in their lives, but there also will be some good moments there. And when you're in a good mood, feel factor sensation, that is when the healthy, intuitive, confident part is there, not your inner critic.
Mm.
And so what I help people to do is to bring in the energy of this part. And one of the top tips is, you know, whenever you hear that inner critic comment like, oh, my God, you know, everybody thinks you're a failure,
mm.
you just breathe it out. And you say this lovely positive mantra, whether it's I'm feeling calm and safe, I have the right to like myself. What we do know is that the more you have positive conversations in your head, the more your mind gets it and learns it and sticks to it and believes in it. And that's why, you know, the repetition is really important. It's like learning a new emotional language. The more you hear those words and the more you feel those words. So when you say something positive to combat any inner critic sensation, is that you are feeling actually, you know, find a situation in your mind where you felt really good about yourself and match that image, match the sensations with it, so that you actually feel much, much, much safer.
Mm.
But what we do know, which is interesting about the mind now, is that when you listen to your inner critic, you're producing cortisol, stress chemicals, adrenaline. And because your body doesn't like those feelings, it will want to get rid of them. And as I said before, some people choose alcohol, cigarettes, food, whatever, to resolve that comfort, to bring in that comfort. But what's great about the mind and the body is that when you think good thoughts, you produce endorphins,
mm.
those natural calm chemicals that make you feel good in yourself.
Mm.
But your body cannot experience stress chemicals and endorphins at the same time. It has to make a choice.
Mm.
And so when you tune out of your inner critic, you're not just tuning into that great, intuitive, healthy part, you're actually inducing endorphins.
Mm.
And this is not my evidence, it's the scientific evidence.
Mm.
And that is what, you know, managing your inner dialogue, you know, I have an inner critic like everybody else does, but I manage mine, and I know the signs of it, and that's what the practice is about.
Mm.
And some days it's not going to work.
I think that's an excellent distinction, like, between endorphins and the stress hormones and just realizing that they can't be both produced at the same time.
No.
That's a fantastic takeaway for people.
Yeah, yeah. And this is what's so fascinating, is we assume that, ironically, that when you feel unsafe, you're prepared. Do you know, like, oh, well, if I, you know, whatever, but actually you're not intuitive. Whereas what I'm suggesting is when you're in this calm space, you make better decisions, you attract more positive situations into your life, you are actually feeling more able to cope with life, and you realize that there are certain people that maybe you don't want to hang around with because maybe they're not very helpful to your self-esteem.
Mm.
Because predominantly when you have a strong inner critic voice, you will have self-esteem issues.
Mm.
And self-esteem is fundamentally what I believe is an epidemic disease in this world, an emotional disease.
Mm.
And that is really fundamentally why people are addicted to things, is because there's something about themselves they don't like. There's something about themselves they feel they need to run away from, and it's usually the inner critic.
Mm. Excellent. And does this hold true for all forms of addictions through your experience?
Yeah, I had a meeting with the head of the Priory, which is a addictions hospital here. A few years ago, I had a meeting with head of psychiatry there. And one of my questions was, what percentage of addictions do you think are emotionally based? And he said they think it's around about 80%.
Wow.
Now, they do say there's a very small percentage of people who are alcoholics, but fundamentally they're saying that there is something in people's history that has created this sense of not feeling safe.
Right.
And that people will use substances to, you know, obviously for some people it's quite dramatic. But I'm not suggesting that my work will cure all, because that's not what it's about. But when you start to learn to like yourself, you realize that you are able to make changes, that you don't have to berate yourself so much. And what I think is great about the voice dialogue is that you know, if you've got an inner critic part, it doesn't mean it's the truth, it's just your history. And
right.
So with the hypnosis, what I really believe is I'm very much more progressive therapist rather than regressive, because if you look into your past, all you'll find is negative inner critic sensations.
Mm.
You know, when you want to, you know, if you're regurgitating, it has its place, don't get me wrong, counseling, psychotherapy, I think is fantastic. But what I believe is that people, you know, we all want a quick fix. I'm not saying hypnosis is a quick fix and it goes away, but when you go to the source, the changes are very dramatic very quickly, because you're breaking the state. You're actually going to a place in the mind that where all the emotional habits are stored, and it's like giving it a new library, new references, so that you are using these positive tools rather than the histrionics of your life and the inner critic.
That's amazing. And George, just to clarify that, so I thought that priori statistic was very, very interesting. So for people that were getting treatments for alcohol addiction, 80% of that was actually linked purely to emotional addictions, and only 20% was genuinely
chemically induced
by the alcohol.
Yeah,
that is a fascinating statistic.
Yeah, and I mean, it's sex addiction. You know, I mean, there's so many different forms of addiction.
Right.
And this is what people. I mean, you know, if you could just sit in my clinic for a day and meet the people who come in. You know, doctors, lawyers, insurance brokers, homemakers. You know, there's nobody who is not. I believe everybody has an inner critic. I'm not suggesting that means everybody has low self-esteem,
right.
But those who manage it very well is great. But I do believe that we are all, you know, and they call it often the imposter syndrome.
Mm.
I have one client of mine who, you know, CEO of a very big British company, and, you know, he came in to see me, and one of his issues was the fact that he was drinking way too much. His wife had enough of him, basically, and he knew it was kind of time to sort it out. But fundamentally, he wasn't an alcoholic. He had an inner critic problem.
Right.
And that's you know, he felt that he felt, you know, he had the imposter syndrome, because in his day he worked his way up into this company purely by being there and being, you know, very good at what he does. But everybody he was employing had to have a degree, and he was saying, "Oh my God, my inner critic," you know, his inner critic was saying, "You're a fake. Everybody else has got a degree. You shouldn't be in this job. You shouldn't be paid all these hundreds of thousands of dollars and whatever," you know. And so he started to believe this negative propaganda to be true. And what he was doing in his lunch hour, he was going down saying to his assistant, "I'm going to have a luncheon meeting with somebody." And he would literally get on the tube and go to the other side of London, to the West End from the city, and he'd sit there and he'd drink pint after pint after pint of beer.
Wow.
And he was actually, literally, he was almost ready to get himself caught out, and that was his concern.
Right.
And so this is the self-fulfilling prophecy that the inner critic will create, because then it says, well, you drank too much yesterday, and then you get anxious, and you feel you've got to do it again that day. So these are the sorts of habits that I work with to break, so that people realize that when you're feeling calm and you feel good, you don't need to drink. When you're feeling calm and you're feeling safe, you don't need to overeat. You intuitively eat. You can still drink. I mean, we're both Australian, but, you know, Australians are big drinkers, but it's more about, it's really about coming from a different space, so that there's pleasure in food, there's pleasure in alcohol, but that you're not doing those things to run away from yourself.
Now, Jordan, you also just mentioned another interesting dynamic there about the wanting to be caught out in the story you just shared. Now is that something that you've seen with your clients as well, just with there's part of the psyche that wants to be brought into consciousness?
Yeah, I think in a way, these addictions are a way to offer you an opportunity to make positive changes. Mm. And I think that this theory, the inner critic theory, along with having that positive intuitive part, you know, the dark and the light, is that everybody, I believe, has the resources. I mean, the self-help industry is just, you know, a multi-billionaire business because people are looking for answers. Mm. People are, I believe, we're in a very good stage at the moment and will continue to, where people are realizing that buying the next Gucci Prada handbag is not going to make them happy. Mm. We have to start to realize from what's from within. Mm. And, you know, that's a very common addiction is shopping. Mm. I know many of my clients who've got themselves into some severe debt because they're trying to keep up with the Joneses, mm. you know. Mm. They're trying to look good, act like their life is completely picture perfect. Mm. But you see, I think perfect is boring.
mm.
There's nothing interesting about being perfect.
Mm.
In fact, the definition of being perfect is being imperfect, because once you get there, you realize it's not.
Mm.
And that is the biggest problem, is that, you know, I don't think that life is going to be one big, fantastic bed of roses for myself nor everybody. But when you come from the safe perspectives, you take the journeys much better. Mm. You actually realize that there are situations beyond your control. And most importantly, that you can't change other people. You can only change yourself.
Mm. Excellent.
And that's about self-esteem, is realizing that not everybody in this world has the same map as you. And when you tune out of that negative voice, what actually happens in effect is you become more balanced, as I said, you become more intuitive, and you realize that, you know what, we're all here to have a nice time, yeah, rather than be, you know, feeling crap about ourselves.
Mm. Cool. Well, Georgia, I mentioned earlier we've had people sending questions from all around the world, and I'm just going to kick off with some of those questions now. And this question actually comes in from Chip, who is in the United States. And Chip asks, how do you know if you are addicted to something?
Well, it's very easy. If you're asking the question, it comes from the fact that if you consciously have tried to make a change, whether it's you want to cut back on cigarettes or food or whatever the substance is that if you have the inability to do that, you feel you don't have the ability to do it, that is an addiction. Mm. So it's something that you feel you cannot control, something you feel is bigger, bolder, grander than you as a person. And that is what becomes the problem, is that you think it's bigger than you. Mm. And that's when it can become more of a problem, because you feel that you don't have any resources to tackle it.
Mm. Mm.
Which is not true at all, of course.
Excellent, excellent definition, and excellent question as well, Chip. This one is more of a statement, and also like an invitation for sharing. And this comes from Helida in South Africa, and Helida asks or mentions, I just want to get some energy and motivation from George's inputs. So for people that are dealing with addiction or grappling with it, what sort of insight, energy and motivation can you offer, Georgia?
Hmm. Well, I mean, for somebody who feels that they're not in control of a particular situation or substance, or could even be a relationship, whatever it is that you've got to respect that part of it is because of that negative inner dialogue, that inner critic conversation.
Hmm.
So it really is important for you to set aside some time to do some self-hypnosis. And self-hypnosis is something that has, you know, changed my life, clients' lives. And what we do know is, what's amazing about the unconscious mind is that it doesn't know the difference between reality and imagination.
Mm.
So when your eyes are closed, if you are imagining, or in your daydream state, you're imagining a negative situation, you will believe that to be true. But if you imagine using all the senses, maybe it's smell, touch, hearing, seeing with your mind's eye, I call it, with your eyes closed, if you're actually feeling those senses and bringing in some positive moments in your life, they don't have to have been existing, but new situations where you can see yourself coping better. You know, even if it's just that day that you're dealing with positive, difficult people much better. If you plan scenarios in your mind before you get there, your mind will then use that information as the truth. And so when people, you know, are saying, oh, you know, that's not going to happen, then if it's like, you know, there's a saying that your mind hears every word you say. And so the more you create in your daily life, self-hypnosis, 5 minutes on the train or in bed or whatever, just through your day somewhere where you can comfortably be, just for 5 minutes, imagining the outcome being positive. Imagine the experience being effective. Imagine yourself feeling proud that you went out that night and you had two glasses of wine rather than two bottles. Or it could be that if you have a social anxiety and you use food or cigarettes to make you feel calmer, just imagine yourself through the evening not smoking. Just imagine yourself coming home and feeling proud of the fact that you were feeling calm. And the more you rehearse these scenarios before you get there, the more your mind assumes it to be true. Mm. And in effect, when you do this, because your mind thinks it is true, your mind and body will just naturally enact upon it. As I said, it is like learning a new language. And so if you want more energy, if you want more clarity, if you want more motivation, you have to see yourself experiencing it, whether it's getting on the treadmill and realizing that you've been on there for 20 minutes and you haven't done it before, because that's the problem. Is it is a bit like the gym, you know. You're exercising your mind, and the more you exercise it positively with positive imagery and sensations, the more it will assume it to be true. And then your natural motivation is there every day. Your natural enthusiasm is there every day, because you've got to remember that the mindset, if you don't have motivation at the moment, it assumes motivation is not a safe place to be. So you need to train your mind that actually feeling good about yourself actually is where you naturally reside emotionally and physically.
Mm. That's an excellent answer. And this question comes from Lord Zan in the UK, and Lord Zan asks, how can I stop slipping into old behaviours and patterns of thinking? For example, when fear creeps in and all those old things come up again, and at times worse or stronger than they did before, how can I stop them from hindering me and holding me back? I'm doing a lot better than I used to, and that's fantastic, and would like to master this change even more.
Well, the great news is that your healthy, confident part clearly is already there. It just needs to be exercised a bit more. And it sounds like you're on the right journey. What we do know is that when you create a new habit, as I said, this is not scientific evidence, not my evidence, it's scientific evidence, is that they have proven that when you create a new habit, positive or negative, your brain starts to pulsate and creates a neurological pathway. And so when you start to make positive changes, the more you actually do them, the stronger this brainwave activity becomes, and then it becomes the habit. So what I said before would come into play now for that question, is because the more you are in that space, the more it just becomes natural to be that person. Mm-hmm. And this is what is so amazing. You literally, on a cellular level, you're creating new activities in your brain.
Mm. That's amazing. Great. This next question comes from Sharon, who's in the UK, and Sharon asks, how can we keep the changes we've achieved from falling back into old patterns?
Well, I think it would be quite nice to bring in some other personality traits in the voice dialogue theory now, because I think it will really help the listeners. We've met the inner critic, that challenging part. That intuitive, confident part is the part that produces the endorphins. But there are some other parts that can hinder a sense of confidence and self-worth. Mm. And one of the parts is called the pleaser personality.
Right.
And the pleaser personality is the conversation that you have in your head that says you have to look after everybody else first, that you can't put yourself first, because if you do, you're selfish. And the pleaser personality, it will effectively, I find that in my work, I do spend a lot of time with the pleaser along with the inner critic, because the pleaser is the part that, you know, give you a great example, the last teleconference on the Drinkless Mind, there was a woman who was calling in from France, and she was saying that she was a funny, funny lady. And she, at the end, we were having question time, and she said to me, "You know what? I can't believe when you explained to me the police are. I'm one of those." And with the recordings that she was listening to that I sent out to people, she said, "I had no idea that I have been spending my entire life looking after everybody else." And the way that she was having her needs met is through food and alcohol. And that is what's interesting about a pleaser. They're really good at dinner parties. They'll make one meal stretch to 10. Mm. They'll say yes to everything because their anxiety about life is that if they say no, they will be rejected.
Mm.
And so in a way, the pleaser is it's not a selfish personality, but the fear of not being loved means that they will always put themselves last.
Mm.
And so that often can be one of the personality traits that will stop somebody that make a bit of progress. Say, for example, I see this in my work with people who are, say you're losing weight and you're feeling really good about yourself, and then one of your friends who is overweight may not consciously be aware of it, but is trying to sabotage your success.
Mm.
And knowing that if you're a pleaser personality, they'll say, "Oh, do you fancy that pizza tonight?" Knowing that you've lost a stone or two stone or whatever.
Mm.
If you have a strong pleaser personality, you may give in because your need to be loved is stronger than your desire to look after yourself.
Mm.
And so that's why some people yo-yo diet. That's why some people overdrink sometimes. And so I find that the pleaser personality often is the part that will create a sense of procrastination and hesitation. And going back to this woman in France, one of the women she dropped her children off at school, and there was one particular woman who repeatedly, three or four times a week, was asking this woman to pick up her children. She was actually having an affair with her gardener.
Right.
And so what she was doing was, before her husband came home from work, she would ask this woman to pick up her children and look after them for an hour or so. And it was getting to the point where it was getting a bit too much.
Hmm.
And this woman was saying to me on the third week of the teleconference, she said, "I actually turned around to this woman and I said no." And I said, "Well, that's fantastic." And she said, she didn't really like it. But I said, "Yeah, but you know what? Your needs aren't being met."
Hmm.
You know, and she said, "No." She said, "I realized I was being used." And a pleaser personalities will tend to attract bullies,
right.
People who want people to do their dirty work.
Right.
So it's a very unconscious connection in relationships. I think I've slightly digressed there, but anyway.
No, so you've given some excellent, excellent insights into the pleaser personality. And are there any other, like I know lots of people actually talk about the inner child as well. Is that a popular sub-personality as well with the work of addiction?
It's a very cathartic personality trait. I find the inner child, and we all have an inner child, and the reason why some people, and it has been suggested that people who have addictions have suppressed inner children,
mm.
and one of the ways the child comes out is through the substances. But the inner child is the part that knows only how to be.
Okay.
It doesn't know what to do. The child doesn't understand the difference between yes and no. It just knows about love. And if it doesn't get the love that it actually really, truly deserves, it will start to shut down. And children who have to grow up before the time they really are ready to grow up will often have a very suppressed inner child.
Mm.
And then when they become adults and they find these adult substances such as drugs, alcohol, sex, because the inner child loves sex,
mm.
not because the child wants to have sex from that point of view, but because the child loves being hugged. And as an adult, a lot of people who have a fear of intimacy may actually have an addiction to sex because the inner child feels it's the only way to have its voice heard. Mm. And this is obviously a self-esteem issue as well. And it's also, you know, it may be a surprise to some people, but if you are addicted to sex, you actually have a fear of intimacy. Mm. Because sex is just a massive, you know, way to release, to feel connected, but often then after sex is done, there is actually usually a disconnection.
Mm.
But the inner child I love food. I love sweet foods. It loves getting drunk because it's naughty. But the inner child is the rebellious bit in all of us. Mm. And it's also the part that comes out when we drink, because when you have a strong inner critic, when you consume alcohol, because the inner critic goes away, you then start to become that creative, doodling artist comes out. Mm. And often people say to me, oh, after a couple of drinks, I get really excited because I think I'm quite creative. Mm. And yet I wake up in the morning and think that was terrible. Mm. But the fact is that it wasn't. There was the aspiration to be, to love nature, to love colors and smells. And they're all the things that children really love, is learning and just being and doing, you know, things that make them, that give them pleasure and fun and laughter. And so the inner child, I find, albeit for many people, they find it very difficult to reconnect with it. Once you reconnect with it, it's so liberating, so amazing.
Mm. Excellent. Now this question comes from Alana, who is in the UK, and Alana asks, how can I apply this to a person? I've broken up with a guy about 2 years ago. I know he is somewhat toxic for me and we are no longer in touch, apart from a couple of times when he emailed to say hello. I still think of him daily and do not wish to. So in that sense, he is like an addiction. I'd like to purge him from my thoughts for good. Is this possible?
Yes, absolutely. Being addicted to certain people, it's a classic sign of he's a bully and she's obviously a pleaser. And the thing is that there is something about certain relationships. The rejection on some level, because of the history of somebody's life, is that they're used to being in relationships where they never have their needs met. So if somebody wanted to have a connected relationship, there may be some sort of anxiety or vulnerability. It's a little bit like a relationship where if you get rejected, then you really want them, but if they want you, you don't want them. And people unconsciously create these particular patterns of behavior. And I believe it's a gift because, with this particular situation, that person's, maybe making contact now again, but that person's moved on. And in your mind, it's really important to move on as well. And the best way to do that is you've got to build self-esteem into your life. You've got to learn to value yourself, to realize that if you're being rejected, that person's not appropriate for you. That if you want to continue to have these fantasies that person's going to come back, or maybe they'll change their ways, maybe they'll see the light, is that you're living with that inner critic relationship too much, because the inner critic will play games with you. It will give you these crystal ball moments. It just tells you all this stuff that's not true. Mm. It's about creating a platform in your mind of new resources. And I would suggest, and I don't mean to sound sort of, in a negative way about this, but you've got to break the state by going out and doing some different things, finding a new network of people and creating 5 minutes a day, creating a situation in your mind where you see loving, healthy people coming into your life and feeling safe with that. Not with people who want to reject you. There's no point. You're just chasing your tail.
Excellent answer, and a great question as well, Alana. Okay, this one comes from Sylvia, who is in the UK, and Sylvia asks, why, when I know perfectly well what to eat and how to erase stress, do I sabotage myself?
Yeah, I mean, food's an interesting subject because we have to eat to survive. And, a lot of people who go on those liquid diets find it incredibly easy. And the reason why they find it easy is because actually you don't have to think about food, because food creates anxiety. Now, even though consciously you may not be aware of the relationship that you have created negatively with food, but what actually happens is that if you can imagine the histrionics of your life, the library at this present moment, your unconscious mind, sees food as a way to fill a gap, an emotional gap. You know, I've talked before at the beginning of the call about vulnerabilities. But also what I'm hearing from this question is There's another personality trait that plays havoc with people who sabotage their great goal on a Monday, that, you know, Monday's the day, okay, you know, start off with best made intentions, right, I'm going to exercise right, I'm going to eat right, I'm going to be really good to myself, I've got my plan all ready, I've got the food in the fridge, and then all of a sudden your best friend calls up and says, oh, you know, fancy, I've just got a job promotion, and I've just been given this massive bottle of champagne, let's go and celebrate. Mm. Now, a pleaser would say yes, a perfectionist probably wouldn't, but the point is that when a perfectionist who has made this great plan of being perfect with their eating, when they go off the wagon, they may have one extra nut or one extra biscuit, is that it creates this, oh my God, you failed. And instead of realizing it as just a situation that is just what happened, is that the perfectionist, along with the inner critic, says, you have failed abominably. And then what happens, the binge cycle goes on. Mm. And that perfectionist will literally have created, from the history of the mind, it will assume that it's an all or nothing syndrome. The perfectionist will say, you have got to do this 100%. And if you don't, then you have to binge to compensate for that. So with a perfectionist, even though the perfectionist, you know, it is a great personality, as I said, but the problem is being perfect is impossible. Mm. And what the mind doesn't realize, because of having a strong perfectionist trait, is that if you have to eat on the run sometimes, that's life. Mm. And those moments can create this sense of failure. And it sounds like to me that your perfectionist is, along with your inner critic, is giving you a really hard time, unnecessarily so. I believe that when it comes to you know, eating well or losing weight, is that seeing one eating experience as separate as the next, that it doesn't infect the next eating experience. Mm. So that if you are invited out for a lovely meal, you can go. It just the rest of the week, you're going to have a really good time. And I think the thing is, when you drive yourself to that degree, and this is what happens with the perfectionist, you're so focused, it takes so much energy, the precision that it takes to be absolutely 100% is emotionally and physically exhausting. Mm. And so at some stage, that moment of going to the other end of the spectrum of binge eating will occur. So to avoid that, it's really about training your perfectionist to perfect balance. Mm. And that is to, for people who have an issue with food, is that before they eat, they will already have that radio crazy conversation going on. Can you eat just that? Mm. Are you going to be able to eat just that? Will that make me fat? Will this make me thin? Oh my God, I have to exercise extra, whatever. And this whole stirring of vulnerability happens again. So food actually ends up being something that you're in fear of. Mm. And that's what causes the problem. So it's really about training the mind. So imagining, as I said, once again, that 5 minutes in the morning before your meals, during that day and night, that you actually are feeling the endorphins surging through your body, so that you're training your mind that when you think about food and when you eat it, you're actually feeling calm. And then when your mind and body, after a period of time, learn that this is the connection, you will feel much safer about food and you will actually intuitively eat.
Mm. I just love what you just said there, Georgia, about getting the perfectionist part to perfect balance, and is actually working with these different parts. Like just that example is just a perfect way of engaging that part, not disowning it or disregarding it, but actually working with it and giving it a goal or an aspiration to focus on in a way that's going to be helpful and useful to the person. Is that a good way to work with the needs and wants of these different parts?
Well, as the founders of Voice Dialogue state, and I completely agree with them, every part has a positive aspect to it. Mm. And all of those parts, whether they're deemed negative or positive, they are all there as protective mechanisms. Some of them don't work the way you want them to work, but that's obviously where my work comes in. It's like saying, okay, I'm not happy with this behavior. How do I resolve it? Because all of them have very much a role to play in making you up as a unique, wonderful person. You know, there are times in our lives when being perfect is absolutely spot on. There are times when pleasing people is really important. But when you come from this safe place, when you naturally, and that's what my work is about, is training people to naturally reside with that emotionally safe part, is that you can dip into the pleaser and say, yeah, I'll do that for you, no problems, because I think you're a fabulous person. You know what? I'm not going to go out tonight. I really want to go to the gym. You know what? I'm going to be a real baby and sit at home and watch a DVD and cry, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just pulling in these parts and realizing that we are all multifaceted.
Mm.
We have these many people inside of us, and that's the beauty of it, that you're not a bad person. You're not absolutely a fake person, that you actually are an amazing person, and that self-esteem is something I believe you learn. It is something that you need. We're not born with self-esteem. We're taught self-esteem. And I think that's really what is important. You know, we have natural wisdom, don't get me wrong, but depending on your upbringing will be dependent on how you respond as an adult. And this is a great way to realize that you don't have to be who you think you are, because you're not.
Well, that's amazing. Well, Georgia, we're coming to the end of our hour, and wow, you've just shared so many wonderful insights, certainly into the addictive mind, but also in just to how to be a functional and integrated human being. Some of the wisdom that you shared has been really very, very profound. And I know that people listening to the call will resonate with what you've said, and will want to know more about the work that you do and how they can keep in touch with you. So I was just wondering if you could actually share with people, first of all, how they can keep in touch, and second of all, any products or programs that you have coming up that they may be able to participate in.
Sure. Well, I specialise in these subjects. If you are UK-based, I have a workshop, my Drinkless Mind workshop, which is going to be in London on the 10th of July, which is a day. It's from 10 until 4:30. It's an amazing day. It's equivalent to 4 hypnotherapy sessions with me in the clinic. And it really is literally working on this level with all these different parts and with profound results. It's just a phenomenal program. And the Weightless Mind, and there's also a teleconference coming up, which is a 3-week, it's 1 hour over 3 weeks, starting next Tuesday, the 8th of July, 8th of June. And at the end of the teleconference, my assistant Janice will send you a hypnotherapy recording, and it's 25 minutes in length, and you'll receive 3 of those, which is fantastic. Now, what they say is that it takes 21 days to make a new habit. But with hypnosis, you're going to the source. So the habit really does literally start straight away. So don't be surprised, because this is how effective it is. For those of you, the teleconference is available globally. It's 7 p.m. in the UK, in the US, depending on what time it is. It'll be kind of late morning or afternoon. One program that I'm really proud of is called Believing in You, which is fundamentally exactly what we've been talking about, but not related to particular substances, because a lot of people may not necessarily have the physical addictions. It could be just an emotional addiction to negative thinking or, once again, relationships. And that is teleconference starting the 9th of June for 2 weeks, and once again receive downloadable recordings to listen to. And then my mother is a sex therapist, and she studied in the States with the professor who was the first guy to decide on whether people should have sex changes or not. He's an amazing guy, and my mother studied with him. And we wrote a book called The Four Secrets of Amazing Sex, which is actually nothing to do with sex at the end of the day. It's to do with your mind. And that I believe, or my mother and I believe, is that part of the problem with people who have sexual issues, it's not because it's who you are, it's your history that's the problem. So we very much work with the inner critic part, but for that particular subject, I call it sexual saboteur, which can inhibit self-esteem. And then I have my writer's block, which is a one-off teleconference, which is fantastic, because you'll get a free download of my book and recording, which helps break those particular habits that we have called procrastination and negative thinking about the fact that the most amazing ideas, I see clients come to me or I speak to clients all over the world because I work with people privately as well all over the world. And, you know, working on these subjects. And when people come to see me in my clinics in London or, you know, whether you're in New York, Australia, it doesn't matter, is that when I work with people privately, I make them their own recordings. Mm. And that is completely personalized. So either at the time, if you have speakers, you can, we can do the hypnosis over the phone, or afterwards, I make the recording. And it's completely all of yours from the beginning to the end. And that is really about working intuitively with you over the phone and then creating a really amazing, I call it homework or your prescription, where you're able to tune into all of the sensations that you've been looking for that your unconscious mind just needs to learn. Mm. And so with all of my programs, you know, irrespective of the subject, you will receive homework. And it just, it's just such a lovely thing to do for yourself. And, you know, I make my own recordings for myself when I'm having challenging moments. And I had a very, very serious personal challenge in my life in January. And, you know, in the past I would have hit the bottle or I would have eaten a packet of biscuits. But actually self-hypnosis has saved my skin and my mind and my body, because when you take 25 minutes out of your day, which is the length of all of the recordings, is you're actually not just sending these lovely messages to your mind, you're also taking time out from your day to do something good for you. Mm. Because hypnosis is meditation. The only difference is that your mind is listening to the words sometimes and other times not at all. Mm. But just to, I meant to say before, Damien, that for those who are a bit unsure about hypnosis, or for those who think, oh my God, I'm going to take over your mind, in hypnosis you are naturally intuitive, much more intuitive, so any suggestions that are not appropriate will not be absorbed. But also that we go into hypnosis around about every 7 minutes. It's a daydream state. Wow. And in order to go to sleep at night, you need to go through the hypnotic state. Wow. And when you wake in the morning. So people who say to me, I can't possibly be hypnotized, I say, well, you must be very tired because you can't go to sleep without going through that particular brainwave activity. So everybody has the opportunity to make changes.
Wow.
And that's what's really powerful about the work that I do.
Well, wow. It's like an excellent message to share with people.
Absolutely.
Cool. Now, one question that I was curious about as well, Georgia, just like with the reference of addiction, now lots of different programs around the world recommend abstinence, and like just with one of the titles of your program, the Drink Less Mind, I was just wondering if you could just share with people like your thoughts, and I think it might tie nicely to actually getting to the root cause, but I'd just love to hear your thoughts on that.
Mm. Well, the clients that come and see me, I mean, I've had a lot of media in the UK, and the reason being that a lot of journalists have come to see me. I always say to journalists, I don't want you to write about me until you've experienced my work. Mm. And the reason being is because we all have an inner critic. And when it comes to alcohol, I have found, and this is not to suggest it's for everybody, of course, but the people who may be concerned they are alcoholics, once we work together, we come on the program, or you can download the e-book. The Drinkless Mind book is a program in itself with a CD in the back. All of my products have some books, by the way, you can download from the site, which is georgiafoster.com. But what's really interesting about alcohol is that once you turn down the inner critic, you don't need to drink as much because you don't feel so anxious. And when you don't feel so anxious, you realize you don't need to have that sneaky drink before you go out.
Mm.
You realize that actually you don't care what people think about you. You become more naturally socially confident. And these are the sorts of domino effects of turning down your inner critic. And so the Drinkless Mind program, I wrote it originally because I was so sick and tired of clients coming to see me and saying, I'm so stressed out, I'm so anxious, children. I'm really worried about how much I'm drinking, and I'm really worried I'm an alcoholic. And I'm saying, you're not an alcoholic. Mm. You've got an inner critic problem. And that's what's so fantastic about the Drinkless Mind program, is it's the first tool, I believe, to my knowledge, that actually combats the first part of the problem of the drinking, because when you start to tune into that healthy, confident part, that intuitive part, you realize you have choice. You realize you don't have to be that person anymore, and so you just don't need to drink as much alcohol as you used to.
Well, that's great.
Very liberating.
Very liberating. Now, just in closing, George, I was just wondering if you had any final words that you would like to leave listeners with today.
Just that, you know, we all have the right to like ourselves. We all have the right to feel good about ourselves. And the mind is such an amazing tool. And so working with it on this deep level, you can make some amazing changes that consciously you haven't been able to do. And the top tip is that if your conscious mind wants a particular thing, like wants you to cut back on drinking or quit smoking or stop having so much sex, whatever it is, because you're addicted to sex, whatever it is you've got to respect that your unconscious mind thinks that the behavior is normal and it's protecting you. So there is no such thing as willpower. It isn't that you're a weak person. It's not that you're fake, or it's not that you're less than everybody else. It just means that you've got to go to the source, so that your unconscious mind, the deeper part of your mind, understands that you want to make this change. And then what happens is your conscious mind and your unconscious mind are not in conflict anymore. And that's when you experience a sense of peace, a sense of positivity, a sense of calm. So for any of you who feel any out-of-control feelings, please trust that your unconscious mind, for some reason, thinks it's protecting you in maybe bizarre ways, but that's how it works.
Excellent. Well, Georgia, thank you so much for sharing your wealth of wisdom, and not only that, but also for going on the journey yourself and dedicating your life to actually live in service of other people and help them overcome some of these addictions and challenges that they face on a day-to-day basis. I think you're doing incredibly inspiring work and really breaking some very exciting new terrain.
Thank you. Well, I love what I do, and that's a great pleasure. That's a gift in itself, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, Well, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for everybody who called in today or this evening.
Yes.
And anybody can contact me if they've got any more questions.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just wanted to echo those words and thank you all. I guess this space that we hold on a weekly basis is a very powerful space, and just your participation, whether you've sent in questions before the call, whether you listen live or to the recordings after the call, or indeed just take that step forward and actually share the material. What we're actually creating here is a safe space and container where people can come explore and discover more about themselves, so they can be more of who they came here to be. So just wanted to acknowledge everyone at home, and also to let you know that this recording will be made available for free on the People You Should Meet website tomorrow morning. So if you feel that this recording could be of service to a friend, relative or loved one, please do take that first step forward and share this material freely. We do have very easy ways to share this material now on the People You Should Meet recording pages. We have Twitter buttons and also Facebook buttons that make it easy to share these teachings in just a click of a button. So we do encourage you all to take that opportunity. Awesome. So that literally brings us to the end of our program. So thanks once again, Georgia, and thank you everyone at home.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.